Are you afraid to raise your fees because you're afraid that no one will say yes? Well, then you do the work of writing a really great story that's clear and concise and compelling and differentiated and speaks to your audience that they just can't say no to.
I'm Matt Fazell from Madison, Wisconsin, and you're listening to You're a Financial Planner, Now What? The podcast to help you fast track your career by bringing you meaningful conversations on topics that influence new financial planners, their careers, and the lives of their clients.
Feeling stuck in your career is unfortunately something many of us will experience as financial planning professionals or in any work. But the good news is we don't have to stay there. Stephanie Bogan is a high-performance business coach who helps advisors build more wealth and wellness and realize more of what's possible. Up next, Stephanie sits down with Hannah Moore to talk about why we all hold ourselves back from our ideal lifestyle, how one mental shift can finally unlock the success you've been longing for, and the reason why no one, not even a new advisor working at their first firm, gets off the hook for just tolerating the status quo. But first, Prudential's new advisory solutions are built from the ground up to help clients with the financial challenges of living longer and market uncertainty. Their advisor-only annuities are unique, flexible, allow customization, and rely on your continued guidance and expertise. Now Prudential, with over 145 years of experience in risk mitigation, can help protect the retirement income plans you've created. You manage the wealth, they protect it so that it can last. Visit them at PRURIA.com. Annuities are issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, Newark, New Jersey, and its affiliates.
Well, thank you for being here with us today, Stephanie.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Always enjoy it.
If people follow financial planning, they have likely heard of your name before. But I'm curious, before we start our conversation, what is it really about this financial planning space that you love, that you keep coming back to it?
It was funny. Someone was on Twitter yesterday and they did a great post that said, define your financial plan in three words. And Adam Schmela, who's one of our Limitless Advisor coaches, has a great answer. It's his tagline, which was planning with purpose. And I thought, oh, that's very good, you know. And I thought, what is mine? And it is truly, and word count is not necessarily my superpower, as we know, but maybe that's why it's so impactful, is when I think about this space, I really think about, like, in those three words, it's wealth and well-being. And I think that's the beauty of where the profession is evolving, the science, you know, in terms of personal growth and performance, but also in terms of what consumers want across all demographics. Consumers have a growing and diverse set of needs, and more they're non-financial. But people are realizing that their quality of life is inextricably tied to their financial life. And I think, honestly, with COVID and just trends that were already in place, but were really accelerated by that, we find ourselves in a place in time that could not be better for advisors who are in the right, who are well positioned to take advantage of it, which is the alignment between money and the meaning that it has in our life. Like, we sit squarely at the intersection, and everyone in the world is tuned into it. So what I love about this space is that it's evolved in a way where we have really moved from products, even through process and planning, to true, what I call true partnership, sitting in the seat of the trusted advisor. And I think that's where we stand to add just a massive amount of value and deliver deep value to clients over the course of their life cycle. And I think the people in particular listening to this podcast are in just the best possible place, because as we were talking about pre-call, I mean, you are the future of financial planning. So whatever wealth and well-being mean to you, the alignment of those two things, at least how I experience the space, is that is where things are headed. And that's what we all love about it, is that it creates alignment in our lives.
One of the things I want to talk to you about is this idea of growth. We start out as a new planner, like, there's all these things that we need to learn. And then I think that growth continues throughout our entire career. Like, we don't ever stop learning. We don't ever get to the place. And I'm curious, kind of, how, when you kind of look at the life cycle of a planner, how does that change? Like, what are the areas of growth for the beginning versus kind of the end, you know, middle and then end of your career?
I did a webinar with Michael Kitsis where we talked about, right, hockey stick growth, right? He talked about, like, coaching drove 10x growth in his practice. We use lots of advisor examples. And it's interesting because it really correlates to that life cycle. When you're starting out, your primary growth consideration is revenue, which ultimately means income, right? How much am I pulling out that I can pay the rent or the mortgage with? And once you hit sort of, once you move from startup mode into, you know, sort of that level of sustainability, then the growth really becomes about how you deliver value to clients consistently. And then the growth becomes about how you do that in a way that also allows you to have a quality of life and or keep growing, right? So there's these capacity crossroads that we talk about. And then when you get to that place where I'll call it $1 million practice, it's $1 million to $1.5 million is sort of where the high point of the correlation between happiness and revenue and well-being, according to the latest Kitsa study, is about 1.5 million. And then it drops from there and never recovers, right? So when we talk about growth, it's about what kind of growth and for what sake, right? So in the beginning, it's growth of revenue and income, because that's what we need to have a viable and sustainable business. Then it becomes about growth of the I'll call it the service model of the business. Who are the clients? What are the services? How do we stay, you know, how do we get that machine? I call it running the shop. Then it's growth of just scale. How do we, if we hit a certain point where we want to keep growing, there's usually, I call it the stress of success. You reach a point where the demands of servicing the client base don't leave any time to grow the client base or allow you a quality of life. You feel like you're really, you know, sort of, you know, tied to your success, if you will. So if you're listening, don't do that. Just don't do that. And, you know, when you get through that scale, it becomes it. Now it's about scaling. I call it the more and better, right? If you push through that $1 million to $1.5 million point and you want to build something beyond yourself, it's because of more and better that calls. And then the growth is not just growth in revenue. It's a whole new set of growth. And you're going to experience this all the way up the ladder, depending on the firm you're in, whether you're in a firm or you own a firm and the experience you have. But you're going to grow as a person. You're going to grow as an advisor. You're going to grow as a business owner. And you're going to grow as a leader. Like when I coach Michael Kitsis, and I'm not revealing private stuff, right? He's given me permission. We talked about it in a webinar. And we talk about coaching, like the roles that you know, at $100,000, you're the head of everything. At $1 million or $10 million, you're the head of one, you know, one thing. And so your role as a leader changes. You delegate. As you all get to a certain point where you're having that first part-time assistant or virtual assistant, that's a growth change. That's the point at which you have to learn how to, you know, move past the, I don't like managing people, because you want the outcome and you're willing to do the work, right? Finding the right person, treating them, training them and treating them well. And then creating an environment that they want to happily continue to work in and contribute. And then holding them to a standard that they do contribute. And if they don't, then you make a change. Like that's all growth, because right now, none of you are doing any of those things for the most part. So what I want you to just get really square with is if you want to be more successful, you simply have to get used to being more uncomfortable. And there's uncomfortable growth, which is where it's working against you and it feels like resistance and efforts. And you're like, why is this so hard? I just don't understand. I'm a good person. I'm trying to do good work. And why don't people just hire me? Is entirely different than growth that says I'm applying my energy and effort in ways that are getting me the results that I want, not just professionally, but also personally. So my advice to you is to really think about where you are and where you want to be across the facets of your business and life. Where am I as an advisor, right? Who you are as an advisor. Are you in a firm that's focusing you largely on investments or products or not, you know, like what is your swim lane and where do you want to sit? Do you want to be in that trusted advisor space? What's the advice model? This is changing rapidly. So if you're in a firm, you might not have as much control over this, but you should be experiencing it or seeing it out in the world and then realizing your firm's not keeping up, which is the advice model is really moving to that goals-based, holistic, personal approach, right? Trusted partner. It's not the patriarch model where we're prescribing, buy this product, do this thing, come see me on this date. Like people are not looking for that. They're looking for that co-creator of a plan that aligns their money with their life and that someone that they can turn to over time. So you're going to grow as an advisor. You're going to grow technically, obviously. You're going to grow as a manager. You're going to grow as a business owner. You're going to grow as a marketer, right? If you want to really drive growth, you're going to either, or you're going to grow as a delegator and find really great. So I've just given you like 97 ways that you're going to get uncomfortable as you go through this process. The biggest shift that you can make is understanding that growth is your goo. Like it's your growth fuel, because the more that you grow your mindset in terms of the way you think about yourself and your practice and your capabilities, the better able you are to create the methods, the proven practices that we know work. I don't need to tell you all how to build a successful practice. You know, you need a clear vision. You know, you need to pay yourself first and take your time first and leverage your time with people, process, and platform and identify those 100 clients that you can work with great and blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm going to say. Your greatest growth is in figuring out why you're not doing more of it. What is stopping the tongue in your mouth and the tongue in your shoes from moving in the same direction? That question will never go away. When you get better at anything, you'll hit your head on that ceiling. And if you're going to the next level, it is inevitable you're going to hit your head on something. That's what you got to grow through. And so your job is just to be in that growth mindset that says, I don't fail, I win or I learn. It's always focused forward. And when I'm clear on what I want, I love to say that when your vision is clear, your decisions are easy. Not without effort or economics or trouble executing, but when your vision is clear, when you have something that you're truly committed to, you know, you will find a way or you will make one. No one has to push you, cajole you, persuade you, force you, drag you to the desk like you're there at 11 o'clock at night because you are inspired to do it. And your job is to keep yourself, whether you work in a firm or you start one, to keep yourself working in a zone of inspired action. And if you can't, then your greatest growth is to figure out how to put yourself in a place where you can.
When I started out in my career, you know, people talk about vision, of having this clear vision of what you want for your career or your life. And it was a lot of pressure of kind of figuring out what that was. And it's changed over time. And so I'm curious, like, how do you see, is that normal for that to change? Or kind of what is that evolution of like us as people as we're, you know, showing up in our career?
So I'm going to tell you something that's going to make you all laugh, and it's going to highlight a point that I'm going to make sure we get to because I'm going to drop it, which is these ideas in our head about who we are and how we show up. You know, you're all familiar with the phrase imposter syndrome, but what it really boils down to is how are you going to show up over the course of your career? And if you find yourself in a firm where you want to create a reality that you can't influence, then you have to ask yourself, right, is this an environment that I want to change? And so when we think about what's clear, when I think about, you know, advisors that I work with, they're farther, you know, farther along typically in their careers, although some of them are much younger. But I'll ask someone who's been doing this 10 or 12 years, like, what's your vision for your practice and your life? And they'll have to think about it, literally. Think about it. So I'm like, okay, you're getting up every day and you're devoting, you know, in many, many cases, too many, right? 40, 50, 60 hours a week to building this thing or building your career. And you're putting everything you've got into, you're making all these sacrifices. And at the end of the day, you can't explain to me exactly what you're after. Like, that's a lot of efforting when you don't have a backstop to measure those decisions against. You can make a decision. It might be a good decision. The question is it the best, fastest, easiest, most effective decision that's going to allow you to execute in a way that's most enjoyable for you, your team, and your clients? And when we can get to that place where we can literally say, what's my vision? I call it, you know, because I'm about big, sophisticated, fancy things, not true at all. I call it the cocktail napkin rule. Like, you should be able to write your ideal practice on a cocktail napkin. I can write mine, right? My clients can write theirs. Put on a post-it and sit on your computer every day because your brain literally like memorizes and reinforces it and says, oh, those are the directions. That's what I'm doing all this for. So that you have a level of clarity and discernment that allows you to take agency over your actions, which is the single biggest reason that you don't have the more and better that you want. Because we get so caught up in what I call the crisis of confidence that we make all these compromises that cost us far more than we think. And the net compounding effect, because, right, compounding has a value, is a lot harder success and efforting than it really needs to be. People are like, how do you get these radical, like Stephanie, how do you 3X a firm in 3 years? And I'm like, well, we just don't do things the normal way. First of all, like, we start with our thinking, which is when the vision is clear, the decision is easy. So this is an exercise anyone can do. Like, take out a post-it or a cocktail napkin if it's 5 o'clock in your town. You can do it too. And ask yourself in 3 years, what's the big why? Like, if you're going to work and do this, like, what is the business and life that you want to create? My terms are, right, 7-figure business, certain amount of income, 25 hours a week from the beach in Costa Rica or the slopes of Park City. I like to go back and forth now. Those are my terms. Anything I build has to fit within those terms. If, you know, one of our clients, Ben, He was like, Stephanie, if you can build a seven-figure business working 20 hours a week or 25 hours a week from the beach in Costa Rica, I should be able to build a million-dollar practice working less from my office in my town. And I was like, yes, you should. 4 years later, he has a $100 million practice, 100 clients, and he works 20, 25 hours a week. And he took off 80 days last year. So he officially works exactly half time. And here's the kicker. He's delivering far more value, far more consistently, far more deeply to his clients than he ever was before. Because he's, to your point around where we're growing, he's growing as an advisor. He's growing as a business. He built, right, a very specialized service model. He standardized and systematized it, which gave him time to meet with his clients and spend with his family. And so as you're going through your career, if you don't have that clarity, then you lack the backstop. If you have the clarity, if you know, this will be uncomfortable for some of you. If you know that you want to do a certain kind of advice in a certain kind of firm and have a certain kind of experience, and that's not the advice from your experience that you're having, we're in a pretty hot market. The question is, why are you compromising? It's uncomfortable. There's some story in your head. If I leave, it'll mean this. And maybe it's the right firm for you, but if it's not aligned with your vision, anything else is tolerating, right? If you want to work with a certain kind of client, as long as you can meet rent and ramen, which not everyone at this point can, but rent and ramen is you can pay your rent and at least put ramen on the table. The second that you get there, your job is to not have that crisis of confidence. It is to literally say, I know who I want to work with. I know how many people I can work with. I know the value I'm going to deliver to them. I can clearly and confidently articulate that value. And I can price and package that value for a fee that I can quote without reservation, hesitation, or apology. And if a client doesn't fit that in their belief or their pricing, then that's okay. Some will, some won't. So what? Somebody's next. Let them go find the advisor and firm that's right for them. Got 50, 100, maybe 150 seats on my bus that I can deliver deep value to. And when you get clear on that and you stop making compromises and you start putting the business mechanisms in place, what you get is more growth, more income, more profitability, better client relationships, more referrals, more time off. And that's available to us if we can just stop and pause and say, what is it I'm doing with my time? What am I investing my time in? And to what effect, and how do I want it to feel along the way? Those are powerful questions. What am I investing my time in? Right? For Adam, it was making $100,000 more a year so his wife could quit her miserable job and stay home with her two girls. Like, she looked at him in the eyeballs one night and said, I hate that a job that I despise gets the best of me. And the people that I love as a result get the worst of me. And he tells the story of where he's like, I shrank inside because every compromise that I had ever made was like sitting right in front of me and the cost of it could no longer be avoided. And then, right, he took action and now he's grown 3X in 3 years and has just, he's, you know, got his pilot license. There's a picture on our website of him in his plane with two little girls in the backseat. Like he built a wildly successful business and a life that he loved. So the number one thing is understand that your job is to create clarity so that you don't compromise and that you can stay in the lane of what's going to get you there and not get distracted by the stories in your head, the challenges that you face, the people that doubt you, because that's going to happen whether you're at 100,000 or I promise you at 10 million, that stuff does not stop.
So Stephanie, I've had a number of planners who, you know, having conversations with them, they'll come back to me and say, well, Hannah, that's easy for you to say you're the business owner. I don't have control of my time. And I'm curious what your response would be to them.
At a high level, I would, at the coach level, I would say that's a cop-out, right? That's a strategy. I don't have control is a strategy because you do have choice. If the market were different, right, we might have a time frame conversation, but I can tell you if you are a quality advisor with some experience and you are looking for a job in a quality firm, you need to call me, Twitter me, because I have people left and right who are trying to find those people. And the market's up, comp is up. Growth opportunities are up, partnership opportunities are up. I mean, it's a fabulous time to be in your shoes if you have an ounce of capability, commitment, character, and experience. And I'm not talking about like 15 years, right? We have far too few younger advisors in this profession relative to the now huge demand for advice that's been driven by COVID and this, I call it the great alignment. People are realizing, oh, my money and my life are something I need to pay attention to. I think I should go hire a financial advisor. So those firms are all grabbing for talent. There's too little of it. So, and now we have no geographic boundaries, right? You can get a job at a firm making six figures working virtually. So if you're sitting in an environment that you're not happy in, that's not allowing you to be your best version of yourself as an advisor and contribute as a team, I'm just going to graciously and lovingly tell you that's a cop out because you have options. You genuinely do. Option one is have a conversation with your firm that says, I don't feel like I'm, you know, in a place where I'm adding value or contributing or getting opportunities. And I do not say that. And I mean, it's all love and respect. Do not say that from an entitlement perspective. Not, I've been here 12 months and why aren't I in charge of everything and making $150,000 a year? Because that's what happens sometimes. And to the people on the other side of the equation, that doesn't seem reasonable. And so that creates, you know, there's sometimes a divide in perspective. And I have been doing this so long that I truly see both sides of it. And the challenges in those situations, you're both right and you're both wrong. That's a whole separate conversation we can get into. But if you're not happy in the firm that you're in, you have options and it's up to you to decide whether you want it enough to do something about it, which just starts with looking. Or you can go to FA Match. Ryan's got an amazing website that can match you up with people. There's resources out there. There's social media. There's FPA website. Now, I mean, there's every Indeed. Like there's no Twitter me. There's no shortage of options. If you're in a firm that's trying to do these things, then your job is to be a leader no matter where you are and to take the initiative and demonstrate the capability and the commitment and say, hey, I heard, you know, specialized service models are the wave of the future. And I read these articles and here are some ideas I have. And that will tell you if you're in a firm that's receptive to that level of participation or you're not. And then you'll make your decisions. If you're in a business, well, then you have no excuses. I'm sorry, because you opened it, you started it, you hired, trained, and manage every single person. You make every financial decision. You say yes or no to every single client. You drafted or designed or bought every single tech platform or deliverable that you have. You are 100% responsible for the outcome that you're achieving. The issue is, where's your mindset? Like, is that slowing you down and creating resistance? Because it's very common. And then where are your methods? Like, you've got 100 levers on the wall. Which are the most important ones, right? Is about getting your brand story and your messaging clear so that you have a precise message to deliver so that you can actually get clients? Is it having a really well-defined, what we call the proven process or the say yes prospect process? Like, you can consistently go through these six steps with prospects and get an 80% yes, right? When the right clients come into the process. Is your onboarding process and your service model, are you leveraging your team and your tech? Are you using client services to batch meetings so that you have more time to grow the firm? I promise you, the levers are there. You don't even need me. Google has everything that you need. You can Google my name or Michael Kitt. Like, it's all there. It's about putting it together. And when you put it together in the right way, which starts always with your thinking, which is the problem, is we bring our conditioned thinking and we're trying to create new situations with our old conditioned thinking. And our conditioned thinking, our brains are hardwired to keep us stuck in the status quo. It's the best way to survive. So the long and the short of it is, it's the voices in your head that are keeping you from what's calling. It's, are you afraid to raise your fees because you're afraid that no one will say yes? Well, then you do the work of writing a really great story that's clear and concise and compelling and differentiated and speaks to your audience that they just can't say no to, right? You make sure you get it in the right places at the right times. That's all out there and available to you. If you don't have a lot of money, you're going to invest time. You should. If you don't have money, it means you've got time. So my point there is, yes, there's work involved. I'm not saying we're building daisy chains and skipping through the woods, but the work is usually not the work we think it is. It's the perspective. It's, why am I not really growing? Well, maybe it's because I'm checking email 12 times a day because I'm afraid to tell the story. Because if I tell the story, someone will say no for the fifth time. And if they say no for the fifth time, I might have to realize that I suck at this. And if that's the case, I might just have to leave. And that's not what I want to do. Which is the voices in your head, crisis of confidence, shrinking you, driving you into that imposter syndrome, which is entirely different than approaching it from the place of, all right, I'm going to make empowered decisions that align my life, right, with the life I want to live. And that means I'm going to need to find a better firm, or I'm going to need to build a different service model, or I'm going to need to nail this marketing strategy. You're going to invest something. You're going to invest discomfort. You're going to invest time. You're going to invest some money. What you're asking yourself is, what am I investing my time in? and to, in this case, money and capability in, and to what effect, and how do I want to feel along the way? And our job is to just be really utterly honest with ourselves about why we're in the situation we're in, because we're conditioned to be about right where we are. And when you step out of your firm or you step out of college and you go into the next phase of your life, you're creating the new normal for yourself. And your patterns of behavior say it'll be about what you grew up in. But your job is to look at this space, which is evolving rapidly for the better in amazing and impactful ways for consumers' benefit, for our benefit, for everyone's benefit. And if you can take a step back from that and just not get too hung up on the fact that you're not there yet, and just realize that if you can stand the test of time, you are the future of financial planning, right? You will be the ones hiring coaches like me 20 years from now to do the big, cool stuff that you really want to do. But it all starts here. And the sooner that you will elevate your thinking, the more you think up about yourself, your practice, the decisions you make, you can take agency. If you realize, for example, that a prospect asking you for a discount is not a prospect asking you for a discount. A prospect for a discount asking you for a discount is someone saying, I've done all the work to get here. I've thought about planning. I've talked to some people. I've reviewed your website. I had a 15-minute call with you. I've now sat through this hour, an hour and a half long meeting. And I think you're right. I think there is some great value to be had here. I just think there's a teensy bit less value than you do. So how about you give me all that awesome with all the love, care, and attention that you give all the clients paying full pot, but you give it to me for about 70 or 80% of the price and we just won't tell anybody. Is that okay? Would you take that client? No. Because I framed it from a perspective of success and empowerment, not compromise. I framed it from a place of I'm clear on what I want, which are clients who see my value at this price point. It's incumbent on me to communicate that value adequately and effectively. But if I do that and they say no, well, then it's clearly not a fit and I wish them well and on their way. Because I only have 100 seats on my bus and there's no room for someone who can literally look me in the eyeball and say, I love it, just not as much as you do. Can I pay less and get more? Like, no, I'm not okay with that. So that's the trick that conditioned thinking plays on our mind. We are conditioned to say yes. In this phase, you are all so conditioned to get revenue. And I get it. I really do. I was there. I could tell you stories like hanging on the wall by $12 stories, literally. And it's what you do in those moments that determines the level of success and happiness and ultimately value that you're able to deliver to your clients.
So I'm curious, what do top firms today have to do to keep top talent?
They have to take care of them. So comp is obviously the answer. I was literally the hour before this, I was on the phone with one of our clients who is like, this is what we're paying our advisor. He has 2 years of experience. He's really good. He's gotten offers. Are you guys ready for this? He's making $85,000 a year, which is fair comp for the firm he's in and the work he's doing. Like, he's well paid until 2021. He's getting offers at $120,000, $125,000 a year. He has 2 years of experience. So one, they're looking at his comp plan, not going to bump him straight up to $125,000, by the way, but putting a bonus plan in place, right, based on his performance and his ability to serve his clients and add value. Two, a path to partnership, which was already in the works, but they're very clear that they need to lock that down in a way that creates trust and comfort and equity between them now and in the future. So it's a good time to be an advisor.
Which side of that, the firm owner or the one that's asking for the comp plan?
Honestly, it's both. If you're an owner, the challenge is finding, and you're growing, the challenge is finding talent. But here is what I will tell you. My clients don't have a problem finding talent, not because I'm so awesome, but because they build high quality firms where they're doing amazing, deep, awesome work for clients because they care and they love it. But they're business owners. Like, they're getting, I've got to have the systems and the standards and the process, and I've got to support teams and have career ladders and fair comp and have paths to partnership and help people, mentor people and teach them how to service and teach them how to grow and how to work their way up the advanced technical, like, and do all of that with a life. Like, that's the big deal with that. Cause I just, those are the clients that call me. Anyone who does not want a business and a life they love is clearly not calling. You're not calling me. So that's, you know, that's the goal, is you can without question, unequivocally build a $1 million, $1.5 million solo practice, you and a couple of people, even a junior advisor, if you want larger swaths of time, and have a wildly successful practice and a life that you love, clients that you really enjoy. And if you want to build on that and build a bigger firm or even an enterprise, the sky's the limit. So if you're an advisor, an owner, or a leader, it's an amazing time because the space is just exploding. It's the trifecta of the trends. We're in a digital age. And with COVID, everybody on the planet went digital like that. So what was 10 years of catching up to virtual meetings and virtual, done, right? So you're not competing with the advisor, you know, Bob, the guy down the street. You're competing with Amazon, that 24/7, highly specialized, highly efficient, fast, easy, get exactly what I want at a cost-effective price. And Adam, whose clients are no longer everybody, not just white coats, not just optometrists within 5 years of selling, largely to a private equity firm. He has tripled in 3 years. He has a 40, 50% growth rate, a waiting list of high net worth clients, because he's pulling those levers. You guys are so much better, quite honestly, at looking at this business through the lens of a business, right? So there's three realms. There's the advisor, y'all, how you show up, your technical skills, right? Your mindset, all those things we talk about, how you sit in that trusted advisor seat. There's the advice model. Do you cover everything? Do you just do certain things? Do you have a holistic, comprehensive personal process? Do you use the one-page plan? Do you use 27-page deliverables? Like, do you partner with your clients? Do you just give them paper and say, go do this? Like, what's the advice model? And if you have more than one advisor, how do you standardize and scale that so you get a consistent quality advice model across your advisory team? And the third leg of the stool, which is what makes it possible and where most people mess up, quite honestly, which is why they don't get all the benefits, is running an excellent business. It's the business, the delivery system. Be the best advisor on the planet and not have good delivery system, and you're going to struggle, and you're not going to be able to grow, and you're not going to be profitable because you're going to hire a body every time you make another $100,000, and you're going to give it all back. So if you can really get your mindset around, how do I show up as an advisor now and in the future? How do I show up? What's our advice model? And if you're in a firm, that's where you have obviously far less control. But what's the advice model I would like to apply going forward? And then what's the delivery system or the business of advice? And again, if you're in a firm, you try and influence progress wherever you can. And if you start or own a firm, then you have complete latitude to make the changes that you need.
You know, one of the things, you know, and going on your website, you know, a lot of the word, one word that stood out to me, and I think that's obviously intentional, is this idea of freedom. And so, you know, one of the things that's interesting, because I've been talking to, you know, younger planners, and they're wondering if they can get some of those same levels of freedom that you're talking about while working for somebody, or do they have to go start their own firm?
The honest answer is it depends entirely on the somebody that you work for, right? So more and more firms are what I call progressive in their, you know, their approach. I'm not going to say work-life balance, because to me, balance is problematic because it implies that when one thing goes down, something goes up, and when one thing goes up, something goes down. And I think the world has just changed. I got up this morning, worked on an article for an hour and a half, took my kids to school, came home, hung out with my husband, did some things, walked my dog, it's snowing outside, came in, worked on the article. Now I'm doing the podcast. As soon as I'm done here, I'll spend a couple hours with my kids, then I'll be on a plane for 2 days, and then I won't work for 5 days. My life is like this, and that's my choice. If you're in a firm, it tends to be, right, 8 to 5, and then this. And so that's where it depends. Some firms are keeping those barriers, and that's just a choice. And other firms are becoming what I call a lot more flexible. I coined a phrase a couple of years ago. I should probably write about it. It's what I call being remotable. So I have a high, if I were going to score myself on remotability, our firm has an incredibly high remotability score, or a flexibility score. Right? You work early, late. When, like, Allison was telling me, she's like, oh, I do most of my writing at night. She's a single mom. She's got 2 kids. Sometimes they're homeschooling. I'm like, I don't care. Like, when we have meetings, we have meetings. Outside of that, just be awesome and get the job done. And she does. So I don't pay a lot of attention to when and how it happens. Other firms, like, you, obviously, if you're in a servicing advisor role and you're meeting with clients, you have a consistent schedule. But I have clients where they have schedules where Mondays are prep and Fridays are free or flex days, and Tuesday, Wednesdays, or Thursdays are client days. And as long as the people on their team are meeting the performance standard and adhering to the culture and delivering value to the clients, some days those flex the team will use to work on projects. And some days it's like, hey, you have 6 flex Fridays a year, use them the way that you want. So the answer is yes. If you're in a firm, it's possible, but it depends very much on the firm that you're in. And I think more and more firms, especially in the competitive environment, are getting on board with the idea. What you want to find is a firm that really embodies the idea, not necessarily one that's trying it on for size because they can't find talent. And unfortunately, that does happen, right? It's like, oh, hey, we do this. And then when you get there, it's not at all what they do. And so you want to have those conversations with people that work there, obviously.
Well, it is interesting of just like the changing landscape and what's appealing to people and what firms are able to do. Like, is it possible for firms to have this level of freedom for all of their employees?
I think that it is. We're seeing a lot more, and certainly in our clients and in larger firms, it can be a little bit. So in smaller firms, you're seeing more what I call family flex. Hey, you can't take off for 3 months in a small firm because someone actually has to, your job is to meet with the clients. Now, if you do client surges and you follow some of the limitless coaching models, you actually could. So, but nonetheless, maybe not 3 solid months is right in a service advisor role. But the idea there is how you structure the practice. So whether you're like the team really can, everybody can't be off for 3 months at the same time, obviously, or 3 weeks, but you can have those flex schedules. You can say, you know, for a lot of our clients, they do client meeting surges, which I've written about, and you can read it on kitsis.com or our website, but you know, there's lots of detail there. But by batching those meetings, you free up large chunks of time. So you could have it so that advisors are meeting. If multiple advisors are in a firm, that they're rotating, but the advisor has 2, you know, surge sessions a year, if you will, and the rest of the year you freed up to do a lot of other things, including have a lot more flexibility. So we're seeing more firms. One of our front clients just hired an advisor, a service advisor, but I'll call him a senior service. I mean, he literally teaches courses at a university. So he's kind of very mature in his experience level. But that's the basic model is, right, we have our meeting surges at this time, and then you have the work that we have to do in between. And then there's a lot of flexibility because of the way that they've structured the practice. But they've structured the practice with their lifestyle in mind. Whether our clients are smaller firms or larger firms, they're coming to us because they want to build that, you know, sort of freedom-focused practice that gives you success, but also the time and freedom to enjoy it. So the honest answer there is you have to be in the right environment. But if you're in an environment that's open and willing to explore it, you can affect a lot of change. And understand that what seems easy and obvious to you is quite honestly scary as hell to a lot of people. Because for the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, success meant people went to a box, wore these clothes, did it this way. I remember when I started my first firm, Quantibus, because I'd started in legal and then I was in estate planning and ultra high net worth clients. I mean, you were like, I was doing cigar clubs with billionaires in New York. Like, you were dressed to the nines, right? Then I start my little firm in a suburb of California and we're all still dressed to the nines. There's 4 people in an office and we're all, and my husband was like, why aren't you wearing jeans? And I was like, oh no, like this is, it was just a mindset. It was my conditioned thinking that this is what people who are professional and smart and on where. And then I moved to Costa Rica and everybody knows the serious me on the cover of the magazine in the suit is now me. Hey, everybody, because that has nothing to do with what's happening inside my head. And obviously time and place are important, but I think those norms are really shifting. And I think COVID, I was just reading an article, you know, the big firms on the East Coast are all Nordic, you know, no one's saying it, but somehow the dress codes have relaxed. It's like an unspoken thing. So I think what you're seeing now, and again, if you're in a rigid environment, leave that environment. That's all I'm going to say to you. If you're in an awesome environment, double down and do everything you can there. And if you're in a place in the middle, your job is to try and figure out with that firm and those founders, is this a place that you guys can go together? And not from that place of entitlement and pushing, but from a place of partnership, respecting what's been built and the time and the effort, and yes, uphill in the snow 2 ways and all of that. But there's so much work that goes into getting here that you don't see. And I can attest to that. As I said earlier, the biggest challenge in these disconnects is not that somebody's right and somebody's wrong. It's that both parties are right and both parties can be wrong. And when those perspectives collide, there's not room to create a space for conversation about what each party wants and needs. Hey, I respect what it took to build and grow and the time and the midnight meetings and the hours that you sacrificed. And I have not had to do that. I totally get that. But I'm willing to do my work to grow my career and make that investment. It's not clear to me how I do that here. So I'm not looking for the easy path. I am looking for a little bit clarity about what my path might look like here. Is that a conversation that we could have? Right now, the right kind of firm is going to hear you. It might be uncomfortable, but you can continue that conversation and create that space together and have a positive, constructive conversation. Hey, we get it, but you're probably, present circumstances excluded, not going to be straight out of school making $100,000. You know, like there's some time and some experience. There's some things that need to be, you know, you need to be grounded and steeped in, and there's a reason for that. And so it's the reconciling of that space, right? We don't want to go too fast, but we also don't want to go too slow. And we lack a shared story, a common language where we can meet in the middle, talk about those wants and needs, the fears and the concerns. The woman I was talking to earlier, she's like, well, what if he's a partner and 8 years from now, when I'm 70, he leaves and I have to buy him out for hundreds of thousands of dollars on the verge of my retirement? Like, that's a legitimate concern, by the way. And that person, they're in a great situation, but if it were different, that person might be like, well, I've been here and what about? And it's like, whoa, like if you can't reconcile those perspectives, you're never going to get there. So my advice to you all is oftentimes when I'm sitting in the middle, people from the next generation or GT will come in with a lot of, I want, I need, I deserve, without a lot of understanding and awareness and acknowledgement. Like, you don't understand how much the acknowledgement will get you saying, look, I realize that I didn't have to do what you did. I'm really appreciative for that. But I want you to know that I'm willing to do some work. I just don't know what it is. That's a conversation that the right person will respect, and the wrong person you'll know. And then your job is get out. Like, that's, you're trying to create a space for that conversation so you can figure out, can we go there together or should I be looking? And if you should be looking, again, now's a good time. So it doesn't mean that you have to chuck caution to the wind, quit your job tomorrow. It means that you have a conscious conversation with yourself about where you are in your career, your practice, where you really want to be, what's it really going to take, mindset and methods, what thinking do you need to elevate, what tactics do you need to pull different levers on to get a different result, and how do you create a space for yourself, whether on your own or in a firm, where you can do that work and see the progress that you want to see. And if you can't, the answer is make changes. Always, whether it's staying in a firm, leaving a firm, adding services, not discounting your fees, the answer to getting a different result, Einstein gave us the secret when he said, no problem can be solved with the same consciousness that created it. So the best advice I can give anyone who wants to uplevel their work, their wealth, their well-being, or their experience in any way is step one, challenge your conditioned thinking. Ask yourself, where do I have a case of the smalls, as I like to call it? Where am I holding back, settling for the status quo? When it's time to stand proud and loud and who I am and the value add, the firm I want to be in or the business I want to build, and make that happen. And you have everything you need to do it.
I can't think of a better way to end this podcast. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for being here with us today and sharing these insights. It's been wonderful.
It's my pleasure. I hope it was valuable to those of you listening.
And I know for somebody who's interested in knowing more about you, I know you write for different articles. I know you have some webinars coming up. Can you share kind of where people can find you?
Yeah, if you want to sort of follow our work, you can visit limitlessfa.life. We have something called Mojo Mail, where I just drop insights and resources and things to help you build a wildly successful business and a life that you love. And we do have some webinars coming up this fall. You can get the information there where we're going to talk about and have Adam and others talk about, like, what are the actual steps and strategies that they use to build $1 million practice in a life that they love. So if you're interested in learning a little bit more about the tactics and the ways to do that, please feel free to join us.
Prudential's new advisory solutions are built from the ground up to help clients with the financial challenges of living longer and market uncertainty. Their advisor-only annuities are unique, flexible, allow customization, and rely on your continued guidance and expertise. Now Prudential, with over 145 years of experience in risk mitigation, can help protect the retirement income plans you've created. You manage the wealth, they protect it so that it can last. Visit them at PRURIA.com. Annuities are issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, Newark, New Jersey, and its affiliates.
Love what you hear on this podcast? Join us in the FPA Activate Facebook community, where you'll find a community of other passionate planners like you. Not only that, but there are live How We Do What We Do sessions focused on what real financial planning looks like in practice. Be sure to join us there to lend your voice, become a better planner, and help grow the financial planning profession.